This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
And I'm Bill Cloud, Assistant Chief Medical Officer at Fort Baptist.
And I'm Gemma Jones, an improvement coach and trainer based in the UK and working with people across the world.
Well, today we are very excited to have Jess Britt with us on the show today. Jess has her own consulting and coaching company, which we want to hear about, as well as a lot of thought on the secret art of meetings people actually enjoy. So Jess, welcome to Connecting the Dots. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we want to start with a topic that we all know a lot about because we all experience it in our daily and weekly life, and this concept of meetings. So Jess, tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, and how we got here today.
Sure. So my name is Jess Britt. I am an executive coach and consultant, and I partner with leaders across sectors to transform their organizations through systematic approaches to managing people and work, especially focused on building collaborative, data-driven workplace cultures. My journey to this has been shaped by seeing firsthand how intentional leadership, including strong meeting practices, can really transform organizations. And just to give a little bit of background, my career actually began in international development. I started at an educational nonprofit in Guatemala City, whose multinational board I later chaired, and so can talk a bit about board meetings and the art and science of that. About a decade ago, I transitioned into research and evaluation in the workforce development sector, so applying social science research methods to understand program impacts in programs that connect young adults from underserved backgrounds into corporate opportunities, and really studied the elements that need to be in place to set people up for success early in their career. And the internal research team I co-led during that time grew as the organization scaled from 15 to 30 campuses. And so I had a big aha moment during that work with even the most sophisticated research and dashboards and systems. You can't guarantee that people will use data without strong intentional leadership, including strong meeting culture in place. That insight led me to what I do now as an executive coach and consultant. And I was really fortunate to learn high quality facilitation skills pretty early in my career. And in my work, I've realized that knowledge isn't as widespread as it could be. So I think meetings are one key tool in the toolbox for being an intentional leader.
Very exciting. So many places we could go. Let's start with, you said something there. You said meeting culture. So how do we assess our meeting culture?
Ooh, interesting question. I think there's a few different ways to think about meeting culture. I think, you know, how often is meeting the default form of communication and decision making is one question to ask yourself. And then what are the different kind of types of meetings that you're seeing crop up in your organization? So are they often one-to-one? Are they ad hoc? Are they recurring? Kind of trying to understand the lay of the land in terms of what kind of meetings you have would be one place to start for understanding your meeting culture.
Very good. I think the other thing I'd like to start with, you know, we've seen this evolution in really my work history. Everything used to be a 60-minute meeting, and then somebody, you know, I guess saw something, and then all of a sudden every meeting was 45 minutes. But today we see this continual creep. Today we're at 30 minutes. Everything is a 30-minute meeting. Can you have a good meeting in 30 minutes, Jess?
I think you can. And I actually don't like to start with the time. I like to start every meeting conversation with what is the objective. And then you can decide if that objective needs to be met with a meeting at all, and then how much time you actually need and who needs to be in the room for that meeting objective to actually be achieved.
Can I jump in and ask a quick question about meeting objectives, Jess? How do you structure a good, strong meeting objective, you know, to make sure it actually is an objective, not just a task or something that somebody, you know, wants to actually do?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that objectives can be thought about in a few different ways. You know, having a good one can help you design that meeting to better meet your goals. It can help you to show up as the leader that your meeting needs. And it can kind of really help set expectations for both you as the leader of the meeting and for those who are going to attend, and can also help you really get set up to pivot if things don't go as planned. For it to be a good meeting objective, it needs to be something that can actually be achieved in the time that you have. So I think that gets back to your question, Brad. If you only have 30 minutes, you know, and you need to kind of keep kicking the ball down the field, what is the realistic objective for that time frame, and what do you need to do before and after in order to set it up for success? I like to think of it as, you know, if you put it up on a slide or just say it at the beginning, and then at the very end you say, did we achieve our objective? Folks should be able to say yes or no, whether or not we did that. And so kind of thinking that through at the beginning, before you get in the meeting, is really important.
You know, Jess, there are a lot of purring scheduled meetings. How do you decide when it's time to stop them, a series of meetings?
It's a good question. I think it goes back to the objective. Why is this meeting on the calendar? What are we trying to achieve? And then really asking yourself, are the right people in it in order to achieve that? Is it the right format? How might you think about asynchronous ways of communicating if it's really just about updates? Or what might need to be done to kind of re-infuse meeting into that meeting if it's kind of stopped meeting the mark? You can also play with cadence. So if it's a weekly meeting, does it actually need to be weekly? Could it be monthly? Could it be every other week? Are all different ways to think about it.
What about the idea of, you know, the next steps? What do you do to ensure that, well, let me ask this a different way. So is it a standard for you to assign homework at the end of every meeting?
I think it is not a standard for me to assign pre-work, because I think you need to be really realistic about whether or not people are actually going to do it in advance. And it can be really challenging to lead an effective meeting when some people have done the pre-work and some people haven't. And so that's one kind of key tenet. I like people to be really honest about the culture that they're in. And if they're not going to do the pre-work, then make sure that you're kind of framing the meeting accordingly. In terms of homework, I think it's best at the end to regroup on what was the objective, what have we decided and achieved, and then yes, you know, what are the next steps and who's accountable by when? Again, kind of checking for understanding in the room if it's truly achievable or not, or kind of what the next step needs to be. I think that that can be sometimes be the same and sometimes be different from intentionally closing out the meeting. That's something else that I do recommend that organizations do, and I have found personally effective, is to do a pulse check at the end of the meeting around kind of what people are taking away, how that experience was for them, what feedback they had on the meeting. There are different kind of ways to do that in an engaging way that can help you get better as a meeting leader at leading the next meeting to be even more effective for folks in the room.
You know, we also debate about sending data, if it's just data that is going to be used to make decisions in a meeting. How do you decide what data to send out in advance of the meeting and what needs to be shared at the meeting?
I think, again, it depends a little bit on the culture and kind of whether or not folks will have time in advance to review it. And, you know, the way that I sometimes approach it is, hey, this is the objective of our meeting. This is the data that's important for us to be able to have this discussion. Some people prefer to process in advance. And so I'm sending this in advance as optionally for those folks. We're also going to take 5 minutes right at the beginning of the meeting for everyone to be, you know, if you're on camera, for example, to be off camera and reviewing this so that we can have an informed conversation about the data. That's one way that I have approached this in the past. I would say making sure that people are clear on what's required versus what's optional will increase the likelihood that the pre-work will be done.
Cool. Jess, earlier you talked a bit about the kind of the closeout of the meeting and how you check back in with people and then you assign next steps. What about the opening of the meeting? What's your favorite way to kind of open a meeting, get it started, get people in the right frame of mind?
Yeah, so I really like to start every meeting, whether it's, you know, one-on-one or 100 people, with some form of a warm-up question. I think that that's a really strong practice because, you know, it's a low-stakes opportunity for everyone's voice to be heard in some way early in the meeting, which paves the way for more participation later on. And then requiring everyone to participate in some small way at the very beginning can help focus people on the present, making sure they're not multitasking. You know, if you know that you're about to be called on, there's a low likelihood that you're going to be multitasking or thinking about your last meeting. I think people are most familiar with like icebreakers and that kind of a question as the way to do it. That's one way, and that really can help build personal connection and bring joy into work. But I think that the warm-up question can also really be used strategically. So asking people, you know, what's your top priorities priority this week and what support do you need from someone else on the team to get it done? Or what's one data point you're paying attention to right now and why? Or what's something you learned in the last week? Those are all ways that are a bit more connected to the work or could be very connected to the topic or objective of the meeting that get people present and in that frame of mind early on.
Right. Okay. So you're not just asking them, you know, your favorite pizza or what animal would you be? You're actually asking something that's tailored towards the content of the meeting to help them get in the right frame of mind, help them get them on board. And like, I like the way you said, pave the way for participation later.
Yeah, I think an example, in case it's helpful, you know, at a board meeting, I once asked, think about a time you had to share your work before you were ready. What went well and what made it difficult? And we were about to have conversations with a brand new executive director during some, you know, things that weren't fully fleshed out and done. And so that question really created empathy among board members and solution-focused thinking that help us then tackle those topics later in the meeting.
That's a great example. Thank you for sharing that, Jess.
Yeah.
I also really like this idea. I mean, I'm somebody that is not a huge fan of icebreakers. So I really liked your answer about how to get people involved in the meeting early. And it doesn't have to be, you know, what was your last scary dream or something like that, you know?
Yep. I think my favorite light one that still isn't quite as out there as some of the other ones that folks have mentioned is what's your smallest problem today? That's a good way to kind of build common connection and common ground. It can be lighter, but can also kind of help people understand what frame of mind people are coming into the meeting with.
So Jess, we wanted to call this the secret to meetings people actually enjoy. So, you know, for many of our listeners, you know, we've talked a lot about meetings and already had a lot of good content. But for the secret, what is the secret to meetings people actually enjoy?
Oh, well, I don't proclaim to know that I know the secret of engaging meetings. So I want to put that out there. This is all kind of gleaned through experience and through what I've been taught over the years. For me, what makes me look forward to going to a meeting as a participant is the opportunity to build connection with other people and move the work forward. And so I would say those to me are the secret. And then if you are in the leadership role, how are you creating opportunities to show how this meeting is actually a good use of people's time and moving the work forward? And the whole point of the meeting is that people are in the same shared space. And so it's a missed opportunity if they're not actually engaging with one another. So there's lots of ways to do that. But I think, especially if it's a larger meeting, ensuring that you're finding opportunities to break people into smaller groups and smaller conversations lets that kind of social component come out and gives more people time and space to participate in the conversation in one way or another, and actually, you know, draws on some really critical adult learning principles, which are, you know, adults learn best when they're drawing on past knowledge and when they're learning by doing. And so by varying the way that you engage people in a meeting, that can set it up to be much more enjoyable and effective, which I think is part of the secret to making meetings better.
That's very good. You know, there's so many ways that we call so many things meetings today. And so, you know, I'm really something else that we have been thinking about and studying a lot at Baptist is, you know, daily practices. Sometimes we call it kata. Sometimes try to have folks that work on their work intentionally every day. For meetings that occur very frequently, you know, can you share some insights into things to make sure that the work is moving forward?
I mean, personally, I like to keep the format fairly predictable, which may sound like it contrasts with what I just said, but I think kind of having that personal check-in warm-up question, doing housekeeping announcements, setting norms, reviewing the objective for the meeting and the agenda at the very beginning, all really important. Then meeting content comes next. That's where I think there's the most variation in the way that you can approach it. And then finally, wrap up with the closing and next steps. I think keeping that general format with a little bit of variation in the middle can help people know, you know, what they're coming into. I've also a proponent of keeping your meeting agenda in a running document, so that whatever you come back together, you can very easily see what you did last time, what everybody agreed to, and pick up from there. So it's not starting from scratch every single time.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Jess, sometimes, you know, we're the facilitators of meetings, and sometimes we also have to be a participant. And I think that can be tricky to balance sometimes. You know, as a facilitator, I'm trying to stay out of the content. I'm trying to guide the process. But there are times when we have to step in. Have you got any advice for when we have to balance those two objectives?
Yes. And I think it can be challenging whether you're the leader who then wants to step in and kind of wear that participant hat, or when the opposite is true. When you are a participant and you, you know, maybe want to see the facilitator or leader land the plane a bit better on the closing, for example. Mm-hmm. I think as a participant who's not leading the meeting, I think it's perfectly reasonable to ask in advance, hey, is there an agenda for this meeting? Or, hey, I saw that I'm in this meeting coming up. What role do you want me to play in the room? Really clarifying in advance, you know, what are your expectations for how I'm showing up and how do I need to prepare? That can really signal that that's how you approach meetings and that's how you would like to be engaged as a meeting participant. I think in the room, this is why setting norms at the beginning is so important for a meeting leader. For example, you know, if there's a tactic, you know, I often use a parking lot where if someone brings something up that's not on the agenda, put it in the parking lot, clarifying how you want participants to help you in enforcing that, I think can be a really important norm to set. And once that norm is set, as a participant, that can be a tool to use to get the meeting back on track. And I think as a participant, you know, you can ask at the very end, hey, I think I heard this. I see that we have 10 minutes left. I want to make sure that I'm clear on what my next steps are leaving this conversation. That can be a way to really kind of instigate that conversation. As the leader, you're trying to balance that participant role. I think delegating some of the facilitation responsibilities in advance can really help kind of establish some of this. So maybe you ask a team member to lead the warm-up question, or you ask someone to be responsible for that parking lot. Setting those realistic objectives at the beginning is really important. If you recognize as the leader that you're not actually going to be able to participate in the conversation, maybe the objective isn't make a decision today. Maybe the objective is gather inputs so that I can make a decision next week. And that really kind of helps ensure that folks are clear. And I think, you know, saying, hey, I'm leading this meeting, but right now I want to share a thought as a participant. You know, you can say that in a meeting as well.
So you're kind of actively explaining, you're stepping out of that role and actually now, okay, yeah, that's yeah. Really cool.
And sometimes that works really well. And then sometimes I think as a leader, you need to be self-aware that your voice carries weight no matter whether you say yeah. that or not. And so maybe choosing, hey, you know, as a board chair in this moment, even if I say I'm just a participant, they're going to look to me in a certain way. And you yeah. might just decide to hold it in. You kind of have to gauge in the moment.
Cool.
Yes, we have gotten used to these types of virtual meetings. What sorts of meetings have to be in person in your opinion?
Ooh, it's a good question. And that's something that I've really like changed my mind on over time. I used to think that a lot of things were better in person. And I think I really see the virtues of a virtual space, having now many years of experience facilitating in a virtual environment. I think what can be lost in a virtual environment sometimes is commitment to presence. I think it's a lot easier to multitask as participants. And so it's really important to make sure that it's very engaging and that there are very clear norms on, you know, not multitasking. And that potentially means as the leader of the meeting, you know, more diverse ways for folks to engage. So really encouraging folks to use the chat, you know, maybe having some sort of sticky board virtual space where people are able to comment while they're present in the meeting can prevent people from multitasking on other things on the side. And I think what also can get lost in a virtual space is that kind of organic between the meetings conversation. And so that's where kind of being intentional, you know, if you can't bring people together in person, are you creating small pods at the beginning or at the end? Are you assigning people to do virtual coffees between? There are different creative ways to kind of encourage and facilitate some of that more organic connection, but it won't just happen naturally as it will in an in-person space. So that's not quite the answer to your question. But, I didn't say so, you have to so do it in a nothing. Particular space. Yeah.
So there's no reason to be in person. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think the reason to be in person is I think people get more tired. This is my personal experience. I don't know what the research show. I think people get more tired in a virtual meeting for longer. And so I think you could do like a day-long session, whereas if you were doing it on Teams or Zoom, I might recommend you do it in half day chunks. So, you know, for really concentrated time together, I think in person is probably better. But I've really been pushed in the last several years and have done many types of engagements virtually. I have been like pleasantly surprised by how effective it can be.
Hey, so Jess, we've all been in meetings where you end up with just one or two voices, one or two big personalities. I think you shared a tactic kind of how to start to make sure you hear all voices. But what coaching would you share with somebody who is trying to navigate kind of one or two big personalities in the room?
I think this is where setting norms at the beginning can be really helpful. So, you know, this, if it's a recurring meeting, you may set norms once as a group for how you're going to be together, and then you could just refer back to those over time. If it's kind of one-time engagement, taking a few minutes at the very beginning to set norms. One of those norms could be step up, step back, or take space, make space is a way of saying it, where just naming for everybody that we want to make sure that we're hearing from all voices. I think as the leader of the meeting, if there are multiple voices that are, you're a couple that are just very persistent, you can say, I want to take a minute and hear from at least two people who haven't spoken yet before we continue this conversation. Again, depending on the culture, you can call on someone directly. Hey, I saw you nodding at this point. Could you share what was on your mind? Or this is where changing the modality of engagement comes in. So you might realize one person's talking a ton. You might say, okay, I'm going to ask a question and I want everybody to write down what they think. And then we're going to go around the room and everybody's going to share.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So another one is this, a lot of meetings today, we have these new participants in the meetings. And oftentimes I'll have to say, well, who is that? What is that? And it's this AI kind of chat or somebody that's recording or transcribing the meeting. Do you have any initial thoughts on that or how it can, what some positives and negatives of that?
Oh, it's a good question. And one I haven't thought a ton about, honestly. So I'll give you my initial reactions, but I'd also be curious kind of what your thoughts are about kind of how it's impacting your meeting culture. I think, yes, it can be a little distracting. And so naming it at the beginning around like, hey, I see all these in here, I think can be helpful just to make sure that there isn't someone who like really shouldn't be in the meeting. I think it can change the tone of like, if you know you're being recorded versus not, it can change the way that people participate. And so that may already be a norm in an organization that all meetings are recorded. And so people who miss it can watch. And so it's less of an issue in those situations. But if someone's used to having like a more kind of closed door conversation, and then there's a recording happening, that can really change the way that somebody is showing up. I think it does provide the opportunity for a lot of efficiency, especially for folks, you know, who want to be fully present and not taking notes at the same time. And so that might be an opportunity as a team, rather than everybody having their AI assistant in there, to say, hey, what are we solving for here? Why are you inviting your AI assistant in? And how might we together create, you know, joint notes. And so maybe we let one AI assistant in and one person's responsible for compiling that and sending it around, could be a way to make it more of a joint effort instead of having it be, you know, five AI assistants are in the meeting.
Have you been in meetings where multiple AI note takers are in the meetings, and whose summary takes precedence in the battle of the bots?
I think that what I've experienced, again, I don't have a ton of experience with a bunch of AI assistants in the same meeting, but I've been in some where there's a couple. And I think what my observation has been that sometimes that's each individual's way of taking their own notes rather than producing notes for the group. And so I don't know that they really take precedence. I think that each person winds up then keeping those notes for themselves for their own work. I don't know. I'm curious what else you all are experiencing in this space.
You know, yeah, I've been in several meetings with them. It's just something else for somebody to go back and review. So there's lots of ways to do that. I think you said it, Jess. It can be very helpful. It can be distracting, quite frankly. I mean, it's hard enough now with this virtual space, and everybody's got a little box, and so these are more boxes that are now, you know, kind of taking our visual space. But you know, it's hard to put back in the bottle, right?
Mm-hmm. Jess, I will tell you that we have had a discussion where we're talking about proprietary matters, and it's not just the individual bringing the bot, it's the actual manufacturer and what's behind the bot. And, you know, there's some learning going on there. And do you want to disclose intellectual property to a third party like that who might use it and sell it to other people?
Yeah, these are big questions that I know all kinds of organizations are grappling with about kind of AI use and how to kind of work through that in all sorts of situations.
So Jess, we've got, you know, a lot of listeners to this podcast are leaders at Baptist. Some may have been brand new leaders, some may be, you know, new in their career. You've given lots of great insights, but I'm wondering if you kind of speaking to a new leader that has got responsibility for getting their team together for meetings to talk about things that are important to their group. What are some key takeaways that you would speak to a new leader?
I think one is that meetings take some work to make them effective as a leader. And you can't just assume that everybody being in the room, no matter how much they like each other and how good they are and all of that, it won't just happen. And so kind of recognizing that you're going to need to bring some intention to it, especially early on, is just important. And I think being intentional at the beginning, kind of stepping into a leadership role around what do you want your team meeting cadence and structure to be? And, you know, as I said, you can think of it as kind of a formula, but then you have your key building blocks. And then every, you know, week or 2 weeks or however often you're meeting, you're filling in those building blocks. And I would say, so that's one piece, is you're going to have to bring some intention, think about it as building blocks. And then three is use your team. So this isn't just on you. Make it clear how folks can bring things to the meeting and how they can share the load. For a more junior person, being able to lead the warm-up question is a really cool opportunity to have a leadership voice in a meeting. Even though that to you as a leader might seem like, oh, I have to come up with a warm-up question again, that may feel really different to somebody else on your team. And as you go, you'll start to learn kind of who likes what and who's good at what. And so it's not all on you every single time.
Jess, that's great insight. You have had so much really rich learning around meetings. And so we are so grateful for you to be on today. But, you know, we jumped right past some of your experience and your background. How can somebody reach out and find out more about you?
Sure. So my website is www.jessbritt.com. That's my name. You can also find me on LinkedIn. And I love hearing from people on this topic. And so if you want to reach out and tell me something you learned from this and get some of the kind of write-ups I've done on the topic, you can absolutely reach out to me at jess@jessbritt.com.
Awesome. Well, Jess, on behalf of Baptist, thank you so much for joining us on Connecting the Dots today. We're very grateful, and we hope that you'll come back again sometime soon.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been wonderful.